Alrighty, thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch, January, June 14th. It's Flag Day, President Trump's birthday, and, well, even better, Terry Savage is in the studio.
I'll give you even one better.
What's
the
that?
Stock market made a new all-time high today.
Okay, and that's what we're supposed to be talking about, right? Terry Savage is here.
I will keep you on track, Steve.
So, you know, also the state legislature, I was gone, but late last week, passed an increase in the minimum wage. And we're going to talk to...
And good, and its bond statuses are just a smidge above junk, and we still don't have a budget. You didn't miss a thing.
We'll talk to Mason Cole, founder of Cole Sadkin Law Firm, a little bit later about what businesses can expect, although I don't think the governor is going to sign this one. I mean, he's given no indication whatsoever that he approves of this idea, but
why
just
would
he
sign this one? He hasn't said anything else.
So there's that. But let's start with Terry Savage. She is here in the studio. And I had asked that Janet Yellen be on, but Janet's busy.
Janet's busy right now at this very moment preparing her speech, which will come in 45 minutes.
Okay, so what's really happening right now? They know what's going on. They've written it. Are they actually in a meeting right now?
Yeah, theoretically. I mean, they probably have lunch speak served right now, I would guess.
Okay.
And they are polishing up the wordsmithing draft. Okay, here's where we are today. Let me give you a perspective. So just five touch points here. First of all, the Dow is trading up 13 points now at 21,341. You can remember 21,333. That was the last closing high just under that. So anything over 21,333 means the Dow is in a new closing high. But, I mean, we're over that now. So the market's happy. Today also, we got news that inflation is down, not up, down. The consumer price index now is core is 1.7%. The expectations among the smart money would be it would be 1.9%. And retail sales, as you heard Orion say, fell 0.3%. And how about this? Confirmation. Oil has traded down 4% today, below $45 a barrel. Let's get to that in a moment. But what you're seeing is an economy that is, I mean, at the best we could call it sluggish. And yet, and because of all that, interest rates on that 10-year Treasury note, which we always quote, it's like the Dow Jones Industrial Average of bonds, a 10-year Treasury, is trading at 2.11%. It was 2.65% in January when Trump was going to get the economy going. That's the rate on which mortgages are based. So here's the deal. We have a very sluggish economy. And 45 minutes from now, probably without, I mean, a smidgen of a doubt, the Fed will raise interest rates 0.25%, and everybody will be going, well, what's the chance they'll do it again, maybe in September or December? With this slow data, probably.
All those numbers you gave me are indications that they wouldn't do it, right?
Exactly. The Fed typically doesn't raise interest rates when the economy, when the economy is limping along.
Hey, Steve, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Can I just get back to
you? We're going to go up to the newsroom here. Kim Gordon's got something breaking.
We have a severe thunderstorm warning for eastern Winnebago County, west central McHenry, and Boone County until 1 o'clock this afternoon. That's eastern Winnebago, west central McHenry, and Boone County until 1 o'clock, a severe thunderstorm warning.
Great. We'll watch for that. They've been getting the rain in Winnebago and Boone, but not so much here.
Glad it's just a thunderstorm and not anything worse at this point.
So
here we are. So this is the most unusual thing. America, despite all its problems, let me give you the bigger picture. You've just got the immediate stuff. Well, we're going to have a debt ceiling issue coming up this summer in the next 2 months, and maybe Congress will be on vacation. It's going to be headlines. You know we're going to be talking about the debt ceiling. We have an economy. We don't have inflation. We have falling energy prices.
Can I just say, when I was early on as a reporter, I would cover Jackie Vaughn, who was the president of the Chicago Teachers Union. And every year there would almost be a strike. And every year I would joke that we could have used the tape from the great Jackie Vaughn the year before because she was saying the same thing the next year. And
that's what happens. The budget money runs. I mean, forget Illinois, because the government, federal government, is not like Illinois where the comptroller could sit on the checks and not pay. I mean, Social Security checks, military pay, that stuff has to go out. So despite all this, the U.S. stock market is at a high. The dollar is strong. The rest of the world is sending its money here because they're scared of what's going on in England. Europe is not over its problems. Look at Greece. I mean, it's a little better there, but not over its problems. Latin America, South America, oh my goodness, they have problems. Send your money to Japan, fine, but there's no interest rates there. And on top of which, they're all old people, so they're not buying anything. And China is its own thing.
You can't say that.
Money? No, the population of Japan is the oldest on the planet, and they are past the age of consumption. So they sit there with savings, so their interest rates are so low. Now, the minute the Fed raises rates, it makes the U.S. more attractive place to put your money. So more money will come in, pouring in to push our interest rates
down.
So
we're living in an upside-down world.
This is really unusual and really scary for those people who are now getting past the end of their investing career and starting to live on their how do I make my money last my lifetime?
That's Terry Savage. You can read more from terrysavage.com. We're going to take a wait. Did you say oil prices were down?
Oh yeah, oil prices are down dramatically.
Have you filled up with gas lately?
This is my annual thing.
We're going to do that in a bit. We're going to do that in just a minute.
I'm going to tell you about these gasoline prices.
It's just like Jackie Vaughn. I heard it from you a year ago.
I know.
It's 12:22. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Terry Savage is in the studio. All right, we've taken care of the Fed, and now it's time for our road trip. Now, you were telling me how oil prices have been dropping below $45 a barrel, right?
Yeah, 4% decline in crude oil prices, but listen to why. By the way, we haven't taken care of the Fed. We're just watching the clock to see what Janet says.
Oh, no, the Fed's taken care of. We know.
They're going to raise rates a quarter. Okay. So oil prices are falling precipitously today, and you want to know why? Because of gasoline stockpiles. This is my annual
44th
of
can
July
I
rant.
Just a moment, because if the people are watching online, which you can at WGNradio.com, but for those of you who aren't, Terry is pointing her finger.
I am wagging my finger. This every year before the 4th of July, gasoline prices go up. And this weekend, I noticed maybe a 5 or 6 or 7 cent a gallon increase when I was filling up. And I know what's going on. And then today it confirmed it. This report, the weekly gasoline stockpiles report, they were expecting a decline of about 500,000 barrels. Instead, there was an increase of 2.1 million barrels. I mean, like, gasoline stockpiles are coming out of our ears. They should be leaking up from the gas stations and guzzling, you know, like a gusher in the
gas
station.
They should ask us to take some extra for them, right? Get it off their hands.
With all this supply of gasoline, how can they raise prices? I want to lead a boycott. I don't know what
to
do.
You just posed the question. You're supposed to have the answers.
I don't. The gas, I know they're retailers. In fact, my dad owned a gas station once when I was young, and he had the little money changer when it was quarters and everything like that. Yeah, it was a long, long time ago. I get the gas station owners charge what they can. So God forbid you drive west on Ontario Street and realize you need gas two blocks before the expressway.
Well, you don't buy gas on Ontario Street.
You never do that because it's going to cost an arm and a leg. But gasoline prices should be down. They should be down dramatically, and instead they're up. And if you think that's wrong.
Well, isn't part of it the summer blend and all of that kicks in?
Oh, no, they have a million answers. The refinery's down for cleaning in the summer. The summer blend kicks in. Ethanol isn't this and that. There's tons of corn around. There's plenty of ethanol. There's plenty of gasoline. Gasoline itself, per se, is in oversupply. And if gas prices go up before the 4th of July weekend, I'm going to be very upset.
So are you telling me, Terry, that maybe they're increasing the cost of gasoline because people drive more in the summer?
Because you're going to fill up, you have to pay what you have to pay. And they think that they can get, and the more people are going to drive on the 4th of July weekend, which is like coming up. So
Didn't I hear that the president was talking about selling off some of those reserves?
Our strategic reserve, that's oil. I'm telling you that the gasoline already refined and blended stockpiles. There's plenty. In fact, there happens to be a glut of oil in the world. There are ships. There's a story online today about a ship that it was bound for China full of oil. And it's sailing around aimlessly in the ocean because China doesn't want it. And they can't offload it anywhere because their storage facilities are filled up. So they're starting to store oil in tankers. You know that'll switch around. I'm not saying that's a forever thing, but energy prices are dramatically lower. So it was a year and a half ago that we had oil, back up at $100 a barrel. We're under 45 today.
All right, so go out and drive now before the 4th of July, before the gas prices go up.
Right, and wag your finger at the gas station. Okay, I want to talk about, for one more minute, because this is so important. Why am I harping on this fiduciary rule, which went into effect last week? I have a second column, part two of my fiduciary story up at terrysavage.com, and you can read it. The first part showed you that the fact that now that brokers have to be fully disclosing all the fees and costs and commissions and put your interests ahead of their own, that many brokerage firms have said, well, we won't charge commissions. We'll charge a 1% fee for all your assets. Well, that's really dumb, because if you already know you're going to be in the S&P 500 index fund or the equity income fund for the next few years, barring a crisis, well, then why should you be paying a fee? Last week, I showed how you can negotiate, how you can roll over your IRA to Fidelity or Vanguard, or use a robo-advisor, Wealthfront, or Betterment. And a lot of people, I got a lot of emails and postings at terrysavage.com, but we really want our broker. We want our advisor. It's worth paying a fee for advice if you're getting good advice. And that's what this week's column is about. And why this is so critical is that millions and hundreds of millions of dollars is now rolling out of IRAs. Look, folks, the market's at an all-time high. If you were a good person and just had them automatically deduct money for the last 25 years in your 401k and you put it in the stock fund, and you really, there was no money market fund in your 401k, you had to have suddenly looked around and said, I'm retiring. I've got X hundred thousand dollars. And all the salespeople are standing there going, licking their chops to get your IRA rollover. So don't let that happen. Don't give discretion to a broker. Be careful that you're not paying a fee for stuff that's really unnecessary. Read the two columns up at terrysavage.com.
Terrysavage.com. All right, Terry, good to see you again.
Okay.
We'll do it again next week.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. And thanks very much for tuning in. I hope you'll follow me on Facebook. I've got a public page, Steve Bertrand, or on Twitter, at Steve Bertrand as well. I try to keep you updated on some of the topics we discuss and just about anything else in general. So if you've got a moment, follow me on Twitter, at Steve Bertrand. A little bit later in the program, we're going to talk to a professor from Penn. I was telling you earlier about a study I read in the Harvard Business Review, and it's interesting that it comes today, because obviously the shooting today might be related in an indirect way, but the point of the study was that economically now we are investing ourselves socially and economically more and more in our political views. In other words, we would sort of refuse an economic benefit if we knew that that economic benefit would also help the opposing party. So say you're a Republican and someone comes up to you and says, we want to give you $1,000. And involved with that, if you take the $1,000, we're going to give $50 to the Bernie Sanders campaign. A lot of people would say no to that. We would take an economic disadvantage because of our political beliefs. Well, they wrote about that at Harvard, and we'll talk to a Penn University president about that, not president, but professor, a little bit later in the program. Before that, how about the minimum wage? The legislature this spring approved an increase in the minimum wage. I think it would go up gradually until 2022, until it eventually hits $15 an hour. Now, it doesn't look like Governor Rauner is going to sign it. He's had nothing or very little good to say about the idea, but that doesn't mean that businesses shouldn't prepare for it or shouldn't plan for it. One of the people helping them do that is Mason Cole. He is the founder of Cole Sadkin, the law firm, and he joins us now on a phone line. Listen, Mason, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Steve, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, so it's your job, right, to get businesses prepared for this, even in times of political uncertainty. So what would you tell people to do today? What should they be doing?
Well, Steve, you know, you mentioned Governor Rauner, and I would say whether or not it passes now, I mean, it's coming. And so businesses can't just bury their head in the sand and say, I don't need to address this issue down the line.
Is there a definitive answer? Because, you know, it depends on how you we'll talk about politics, where you stand on the issue of whether jobs are created by increases in the minimum wage or jobs are decreased. Is there, can you answer that question definitively one way or another?
You know, I can from my personal experiences. So our firm represents a lot of small businesses in Chicago. And for better or for worse, I think perception fuels reality. So I think a lot of local businesses, especially in Chicago proper, are saying, I'm nervous about these increased costs. Why don't I hold off on hiring for the next year or two? So the question is, do the existing employees kind of benefit from minimum wage? Possibly, but I think the real concern is, are people afraid to hire?
So people are holding back out of maybe not real evidence or real consequence, but out of concern or fear.
Yeah, I think you described it perfectly. I mean, a 50-cent increase, you know, a dollar increase year by year is really not going to affect a business's bottom line. However, I think that perception of, you know, where does it end, that slippery slope kind of creates this fear of, I just don't want to deal with it, so I'm not going to hire an additional server at my restaurant or an additional welder at the plant.
Okay, so the idea is if you're a business owner and you have to pay more to your workers, well, that takes money away from your bottom line. That's bad. So you might be less inclined to hire or expand in the future. That's the negative side. The positive side is those workers who you're paying are now making more money. They're a little more comfortable, which means they're spending more money. So maybe they're going out to restaurants like yours more often, making them busier and giving them a little cushion to expand and hire, right? I mean, that's the yin and the yang of the whole thing.
You know, it is. And Steve, to your point, I read a study that 40% of Illinois residents are earning $15 or less. So I think there's this perception of it's not happening to me, it's not happening to my neighbor, but a large portion of the earning population is earning this lower wage. However, you have the question of, do you increase everyone's wages by a dollar, or do you help the business to essentially hire yet another employee, you know, at $13, $15, whatever it is?
And so it is there, I mean, I get in trouble when I talk about this because it seems to me that a lot of businesses, I tend to feel a little more sympathetic to the person making $9 an hour than to the person paying them. And, you know, maybe that's mostly out of ignorance because I've never had to meet a payroll. I don't know what goes into that. I'm sympathetic to it, but I tend to see it the other way. I mean, is there a way, do you have a balance sheet? Are businesses in Illinois, can they afford this increase?
You know, I don't think they can. I think that when you look at a large business that maybe could afford it, I think the problem is they're being attracted by EDGE tax credits to go to Indiana. I think where this really hits hard is the small five-person restaurant, the six-person software company that maybe has these clerical services, and all of a sudden, you know, revenue's malleable. If they have increased wages, it's coming from somewhere.
Right.
And so I think there's this perception of these fat cat corporations. But the small businesses, the businesses that maybe are barely making ends meet, you know, that money's either going to come from lower quality services to offset the difference or, increased costs.
Right. So if those workers make more money and they one day maybe spend more money elsewhere, that's a maybe. If you're a business owner, it's an automatic. You will be paying those people more. I mean, that's just a given.
Well, you know, the way I look at it, and to play devil's advocate, is if you give a business owner $10,000. I mean, if it's a large company, they might put in a savings account. But if you give a small business that's maybe making 200 grand a year, 10 grand, they're not putting it in a savings account. They're putting it back into the economy that day, and most likely by hiring another employee.
So you just argued my point a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
And you did it better than me, so I appreciate that, Mason. Nice work. How about if you're looking at business owners and people, you know, we talk about automation and how the low wage worker might be replaced by machines. If you're a business owner and you see the minimum wage going up, does that mean that maybe it's time for you to invest a little bit more in automation to get rid of some of those people?
Well, you bring up an interesting point. I think when a business owner says, well, wait a minute, my costs are going up, I don't think they say this is great. I think they start saying, well, how can I get around this? And, you know, they can't get around the law, but they can get around hiring that other person, possibly replacing that other person. You know, my stance as the business owner is always, how can we make the workers more qualified so that they cannot be replaced? So that the employer says, well, let me pay them so that they don't switch jobs. So I think that's definitely a challenge.
Well, that's the point again for a minimum wage increase. The more you pay your workers, the more likely they are to stay and be happy and take a little pride in their work.
True. I think the real challenge is, you know, we need to argue about what is a living wage. You know, we're arguing about going up to $13 an hour, going up to $14. But when you look at the people in these positions, if you're a mother or father with children, $15 an hour isn't going to cut it.
Right.
You know, I think the question is $20 an hour might not cut it. So you start having a philosophical argument.
All right. So you're in the governor's office right now. He's asking you, Mason Cole, should I sign this increase or not? And your answer for him is?
My answer is same as I don't think he should sign it.
Mason Cole, founder of Cole Sadkin Law Firm that looks at businesses, helps them out. Hey, thanks very much. You helped us out today. I'm glad you could join us.
Steve, thanks for the opportunity.
You bet. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720. Let me ask you this. When you go shopping, are you more likely to go into a store where you know the shop owner views things the way you do politically. So you're conservative. You're going to go shop at a conservative shop, a Republican store, or Democrat the other way. Some researchers at Harvard and Penn and elsewhere say the answer to that is yes. Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch. All right, this conversation was scheduled well ahead of the news events from this morning, and maybe they are related or maybe they're not. I'm not sure. We'll ask our guest about it in just a minute. But consider this. According to a Pew Research poll, 45% of Republicans and 41% of Democrats now think the other party is so dangerous that it is a threat to the nation. That's kind of where we are today, and it's bleeding over into economics. It's becoming sort of part of our not just political identity, but social identity. Those are the findings of a study, and one of the people who did the research is Matt Lewandowski, who is an associate professor of political science at Penn. He joins us on a phone line now. Professor, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Well, great. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Let's just start, and then we'll move on. But the research you did, what you looked at, does that lend itself at all to this shooting today, if it was politically motivated? Does that help explain it, or are these altogether unrelated?
Maybe not quite unrelated, but, you know, I don't think we know quite enough yet, or at least I don't know enough yet. I've been in meetings much of the day. You know, to know exactly what the shooter's motives were. So, you know, and that's obviously a very extreme example of,
sure,
of sort of political violence. But, you know, on a more kind of ordinary level, you know, and that's obviously terrible and deplorable, but on a more ordinary level, we see, you know, as that Pew number suggests, ordinary Democrats and Republicans feeling like they, you know, the other side just doesn't have any good ideas. And it's not just they have different attitudes or beliefs, they're, you know, contemptible, they're, you know,
they're stupid,
not good people.
They're,
yeah,
dumb.
Yeah, when I started researching polarization, you know, 10 to 15 years ago, it was all about, oh, Democrats and Republicans just have different ideas, and there's, you know, been a long debate about the extent to which that's true. But now, you know, the evidence seems to be suggesting that even setting aside those issue beliefs, you know, people just hold very negative views and stereotypes of the other side.
And so you looked at it. Let's go to Main Street. I'm walking down Main Street, and I've got two hardware stores to choose from. I know the one on the right, well, let's just say the one on the right is conservative, and the one on the left side of the street tends to be liberal. You're telling me that if I'm a conservative, I'm more likely to go to the conservative store rather than the liberal store?
Well, I mean, and these would operate, you know, sort of, let's say, more on the margins of these sorts of things. But, you know, if you look at the kinds of political activities that have happened around business, you know, for example, there were calls to, you know, boycott Macy's, right, or pressure them to drop, you know, some of Donald Trump's brands, or, you know, the sort of issues that came up with Ivanka Trump's brands at places like Nordstrom, right, suggests that maybe now the decisions people make as consumers aren't so separate from the decisions they're making politically, right? That how people are spending their money becomes an expression, at least in part, of their political views as well.
You know, I'm thinking of the Catholic Church bulletin where the Catholic businesses advertise on the back of it, or there used to be the Jewish phone books where there, you know, you could find a Jewish business if you want. And it sounds like that's sort of where, in a way, I mean, I guess, Professor, I'm wondering about, I can see if it's very political. If I know that this store advocates this, then I'm going to support them in that way. But I'm wondering if it's becoming a little more finesse than that, then it's just sort of, we don't necessarily know we're doing it. It's not a conscious decision, but we're gravitating toward economic outlets that tend to see things our way.
Yeah, and I think we want to be careful. It's not that people are, you know, this is dominating their beliefs. Again, this is something that is happening, you know, even in the you know, studies we did much more on the margins. Yeah, I think that's right, that this is, you know, one of the factors. But, you know, to the extent that there are these signals, it can be a factor.
So if you're running, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say that, you know, many businesses do try to, you know, stay neutral on these things and avoid, you know, sort of angering people on one side or the other.
Okay, so is this a warning or good advice if you're a business owner? Because maybe you want to tap into this to increase your business, or on the other hand, maybe you want to avoid it to keep from alienating people.
Yeah, I think most people would probably say avoid it to keep from alienating, you know, people.
Matt Lewandowski is an associate professor of political science at the University of Pennsylvania. You made us all smarter today. Thanks for that.
No problem. Thanks so much for having
you
me.
You bet. Hope we can talk again.